Or by preliminary.
Okay. Okay. Good evening, everyone. Sorry for the delay. Shear is tonight is being anonymously sponsored by Elka for the Refuah Shlema of Elka Bas Asher HaKohen. And thank you again to the Fine family for hosting. Basically, last time we left off, the last thing we discussed, which we will not go into detail now again, we mentioned last time the question of if there are poor people that are standing in front of you, so is there an obligation, aside from whatever general chiv of tzedakah that you have, is there a special obligation to give that poor person something? And we said, according to the Rambam, and according to the, based on the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch passes this way as well, that there is a special obligation to not send the ani away empty-handed. He said it was al yashov dach nichlam. That's the pasuk the Rambam quotes, and the halacha is essentially that way, that you have to give him something. It's not clear exactly how much, but it seems that even an extremely small amount, which some poskim say is even less than a shavat pruta, is sufficient, but as long as you give him something so that he's not turned away completely empty-handed. Thank you very much. That was what we mentioned last time. We discussed that there was machlokas haposkim, whether the same thing applies to somebody else who is collecting on behalf of the ani, either if somebody is walking around collecting for a different individual who is needy. I saw, on my way here, I saw a number of shluchim circulating around the streets of Yad Binyamin. Also questions when it comes to phone calls or letters in the mail. All these kinds of questions we said last time was a machlokas haposkim. And the truth is that I don't remember exactly what I mentioned last time, but just a review. So I saw different directions in the poskim about exactly, even halacha lamasa, which direction we should take here. So in Rabbi Taub's books, Rabbi Taub seems to think that the consensus of poskim is that even when the ani himself is not coming to ask money from you, you should still give him something, or if it's a letter or a phone call, you should ideally give them something. And Rabbi Maybrook from YU, who also gave a shir, I mentioned last week, he gave a shir on tzedakah, I think it was a year or two ago, so he seemed to feel that the consensus of poskim was not that way, that the consensus of poskim, and this, by the way, includes the Derech HaMuna, Rav Chaim Kanievsky, in his sefer on Hilchos Matnos Aniyim, so he also passes this way, that there's no obligation of giving somebody money if he's at your door, if he's not the ani himself. Again, obviously you have a mitzvah of tzedakah for the year, which we discussed last time exactly how much that was, but there's no specific obligation to give this person money if he's not the ani himself, because the pasuk that the Rambam quotes, al yashov dach nichlam, ani ve'adyon yahalu shemecha, refers specifically to the ani himself, and therefore any other case would not be included. So again, we have different directions about this. I guess, halacha, if you're able to, again, this doesn't have to be a large amount, any amount, give him even a shekel or two, is sufficient to fulfill this type of chiyuv of the Rambam. So, in terms of the halacha, it's, if you want to be yotze kol hadeis, it's definitely better if you can give them something. But again, there are enough poskim to rely on, and definitely the logic is definitely on the side that this chiyuv of the Rambam is not necessary when you don't actually have the real ani coming around. Okay, that's basically just a quick review and, you know, one or two extra points what we discussed at the very end of last year. This year we'll be following up with a number of other very, very interesting and important questions about understanding the people that are coming to your door and who should be getting money in the first place. Yes?
Before we continue,
yes.
I think it was supposed to be Ilui Nishma.
Ilui Nishma?
I think so.
Okay, I think it was on the email. I thought it was a Refuah Shlema, no?
I could be wrong.
I'm pretty sure it was Refuah Shlema.
Ibu Nishma?
Oh, I apologize then. Okay, so again, it's Ibu Nishma. It's Ibu Nishma, it's El Kabas Asher. I apologize about that. I, for some reason, thought it was Refuah Shlema, but it should be Arliyas Neshama. Okay. Thank you. Sorry.
Is there any sort of, against, I mean, generally, if you have a certain amount of money you're supposed to give, because I got upwards of 10%, I wasn't here last week, shared, and I apologize, that was away. But is there any sort of in or some sort of is there against holding a certain amount? Let's say you get a paycheck every month, right?
Right.
So 10% of it you're supposed to apportion away and give away for stuff, or
right.
Keep track of that somehow.
Right.
Is there against holding that money until it becomes a significant enough sum?
Okay.
To give
good.
Anyone?
Good. So we'll discuss that, God willing, probably next week. Hopefully, at some point during next week's share, we'll get into the topic of Maaser Kesafim. That'll be more the issue when it comes to that question. Last week we discussed the general chiyuv of tzedakah and how much is considered to be appropriate. We mentioned that the appropriate shear is 1/10, but it's not an obligation in any sense. Maaser Kesafim, we'll discuss next week, is either a mitzvah derabanan or even just a very, very important custom. And when it comes to that, then we can discuss all the questions of exactly when you can, when you should apportion it and at what point you have to give it away, and if you're violating an iser, that'll be hopefully for next week. Okay, so just coming to the next topic or two by already stating that we probably will end up with more questions than answers. There are a lot of difficult, delicate questions when it comes to some of these issues here, which are not clear what the absolute answers are. So I'll try to give some sort of direction, and some of the bottom line practical questions, I can also give some direction, but again, I cannot guarantee you an answer for every single point that that I will mention, and that will be brought up, I'm sure, by many of you. So again, just I apologize about that, but again, that's the nature of this game sometimes, that not everything has a clear-cut answer, if you haven't figured that out yet. Okay. So in section 6, this is again the conclusion of the source sheet from last week, which unfortunately I forgot, but thank you, Eitan, for and thank you, David, for helping us bring the copies back. So the question is so an ani knocks on your door. Okay, this happened tonight. I was at Marv. My wife comes home. I walk in after Marv. My wife says, why did you knock on the door? I said, I didn't knock on the door. She said, somebody knocked on the door, rang the bell, and then you walked in. She said, I walked in the back door. I walked in the kitchen door. Apparently it was some of those ani, the shluchim that were circulating around town that probably knocked on the door and rang the bell that you did not answer the door for. Anyway, so let's say that sometimes the door is answered. Okay, so he comes and so he says, I'm collecting for this and this tzedakah, I'm collecting for myself, for my friends, you know, whatever it is. So how do you know that he's telling the truth? And what do you do if you don't know that he's telling the truth? You have to investigate if he's telling the truth. So this is a very, very important issue. To my surprise, there was actually, at least from what I found, there was not a significant body of literature in the poskim that I was able to find. I really thought there would be a lot more about this. And for some reason, I really didn't find very much at all. So I'll share with you what is in the sources, and from that point on, we'll have to sort of take it ourselves and, again, some give some suggestions, and we'll work with that. So start with source, not with 23, but rather with 24. This is the first Gemara, which is a very, very interesting one. This sort of frames the hashkafic background of this part of the discussion of tzedakah. The Gemara says in source number 24, this is the Gemara in Tzivos and Da'asam and Chesed with Aleph, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Bo v'nachazik tova l'ramayim, shil mole hein hayinu chotim l'chol yom. Rabbi Elazar says, we should come and give thanks or give at least credit to the Ramayim. Ramayim are the people that are the deceivers. They're the ones that are coming around asking for money when really they do not need it. Because if not for them, hayinu chotim l'chol yom, we would be sinning every single day. Why would we be sinning every single day? Well, I don't know about you, but for some of us, we're not always so careful about making sure that we give every single poor person that comes to our door. Sometimes we don't even answer the door. And when we answer the door, sometimes we look at him and we say, I'm sorry, I don't have any money today, and you close the door on him. So that's one case. Or the case when you walk right past somebody who's an ani who asks for money and you just ignore him. So if every single person that was asking for money was absolutely legitimate, so you might run into a problem that we would be sinning every single day by avoiding giving the aniyim the money that they deserve, which we saw last time is an important iser, a mitzvah tasei, as well as an iser, a lotasei in the Torah, of a number of lotaseis, of lo sameitis, levavacha, etc., etc. That would be a problem if there are so many people that all need and we're not giving to them. So the fact that there are some people that do not really need and you decide not to give them, that is our savior. That's how we avoid sinning every single day because we have some Ramayim around that are not so honest about this. So in reality, it might be somewhat of a good thing that these people exist. That's the hashkafic background of this statement, that we sometimes get a little frustrated that there's so many people, we never know if anybody's telling the truth and what they're doing, but really, we have to remind ourselves that if not for them, we would be counted for having more averis than we actually are.
Sorry,
okay. Which part specifically?
There are more people. I don't understand.
It's sort of, I think it gives you an excuse of not giving
right.
Because there are some people who are not legitimate.
It's someone else.
So,
right.
If you knew everyone was legitimate, you have to give to everybody. But because there are some people who are not legitimate.
Right.
But do we have evidence that there are people that are legitimate? Or just
yeah.
We assume?
That's
just a loving loophole.
There's not many suggesting you do it, but if you don't, you have the excuse of saying,
right.
Go back.
Yeah, basically. Basically what he's saying is it's understood that most people do not actually give tzedakah to every single person that maybe they should be. If that's really true, again, maybe you're better than the rest of us. could be. The guy might suck, all right? But it's clear, even if it's not here, but let's say you walk on the streets. Again, I don't know how many of you get to Yerushalayim, but you walk on the streets in Yerushalayim, it's impossible to walk, you know, 5 feet or 5 meters, whatever the case is, without bumping into somebody who's asking for tzedakah. And again, from my own experience, I often don't give. So once in a while, I try to give them, but I don't give them every single time. Again, we'll have to see if that's really included. They're not walking to your door, but... You know, suffice it to say that if every single person was legit, then we definitely would be being over the lotasei of giving tzedakah much more than we are. So therefore, we should be happy that some people are among, which again gives us sort of a little bit of a cop out. Doesn't mean we can never give tzedakah, but it means that we're not held as accountable as many times as maybe we would have been. That gemara, by the way, is not so clear. There are different interpretations of that gemara, but that's what we just discussed. Is I think one of the standard interpretations. Let's go to the actual halacha now. So the actual halacha is as follows. Look at source number 25. So this is the Shulchan Aruch. This is based on a different gemara in Bava Basra. The Shulchan Aruch says, "Mi shavaga amar ha'chiluni." Somebody comes to the door, knocks on your door. Picture this case. You open the door. He looks at you. He says, "I'm hungry. Please forgive me. Do you have any food?" When was the last time that an ani stopped at your door and actually asked for food? I sometimes try to give them food instead of giving them money, and you know they laugh at you. They don't want food. They just want your money. But whatever the case is. So here, the halacha is, you can't check, you're not supposed to check to see if he's legit or not. Rather, you should give him food right away. What's the logic behind that, anybody?
That's what he needs.
Right, not only is that what he needs, but...
He's hungry.
He's hungry, right? How hungry is he? We don't quite know. It could be that he's really, really hungry, and God forbid his life might be in danger, and then, you know, God forbid... Yes, that's one of the stories. I think you're right. That's one of the stories that's brought from him. That there was somebody that came and he was basically hungry and they wanted to check first. At the end of the day, unfortunately, he died.
He said, "Wait till I just finished loading my
donkey," or whatever donkey, it was.
Yeah.
And the ani died. So that gemara, is a different gemara, but again, it's definitely the same point. That here we're looking at the fact that you never know what might be with the ani that's coming that's asking for food. You don't know exactly how hungry he is. So in that case, we do not check, we don't investigate, we just give him food immediately. Haya arum uvavil amar, but if he did not have clothing, or at least he didn't have sufficient clothing, or he didn't have appropriate clothing, and he says kisun, he says kavri, please give me clothing. In that case, bokin acharav imhu ramai, we give him a bedika. Okay, we give him some sort of check to see if he is legit or not. And the Shulchan Aruch concludes with an interesting line, which we're not going to go into now. It says, if you already recognize him, you already know who he is, then apparently in that case you assume he's legit, and you should give him clothing right away. The last line, again, is an interesting line. It doesn't quite fit here. We're not going to go into that now, exactly what the significance of that line is. For our purposes now, I think we're going to focus on the middle case. Yes, question.
That's unless he's coward.
So in the Gemara, this is not so clear, but the later folks, I believe, spell this out, or Tzal definitely quotes a number of opinions about this, that certainly if he literally is coming in, and it's 20 degrees outside, and it's snowing, and he's literally coming in with basically nothing on his back, absolutely that's not the case of the Gemara. In that case, you absolutely should give him clothing first. The case we're talking about here is where he has something, but it doesn't look so nice, or maybe it's in tatters, or something else. And then the question is, you know, whether that is sufficient need to give him immediately without checking out his credentials first. I apologize. You're right. Messed up again. 20 degrees, when I said 20 degrees, I meant Fahrenheit. 20 degrees Celsius is about the temperature outside right now, which is comparatively to other places in the world right now. It's quite nice. Okay.
Practically speaking, I know in the States there are many cities where they have people who check, you know, they investigate. Is there such a thing in Israel?
Yes, there absolutely is, but unfortunately it's not done everywhere. Let's just give me a few minutes to develop this a little more, and then you can follow up, ask again, if need be. So let's just understand the makaros here. The first question is, the cases that we have today are usually cases of money. People are not usually coming asking for clothing. They're not usually coming asking for food. So the first question we just have to figure out is, where does the question of asking for money, where does that fit in the context of this Shulchan Aruch? Because when somebody asks for money, more similar to asking for food or more similar to asking for clothing? What would you say?
Clothing.
Probably clothing, right? That's what I thought as well. That is what I believe, again, unfortunately I did not find a lot of literature about this in the post, at least that I saw, because I didn't look hard enough. I'll have to look harder next time. But definitely in this paper here, which is the Avnei Yashba by Pesach Feinhandler. Pesach Feinhandler, yeah, he's the Rav in he's in Yerushalayim or in a Kibbutz. I heard different stories about exactly where he was from, but he's definitely from Eretz Yisrael. So he has an interesting tshuva, which we will get back to in just a minute, but as we'll see in a minute, he seems to assume clearly that that the question of asking for money is definitely more similar to asking for clothing, and this is, I think, is generally what's assumed by most of the poskim. It's definitely the more logical approach, and therefore the conclusion would be that anybody that's asking for money, you have the at least you have the right and perhaps even the obligation to check him out, to do a bedika of some sort to see exactly whether he actually qualifies for getting money or not. That's all we see from the Shulchan Aruch. In source number 26, we see the Shulchan Aruch on Siman Reish Nun Hey pointing out as well something which, again, doesn't help us all decide who's legit, but it does note that Kol Mish Eino Tzarech Li Tol Miat Tzedakah Umarana Ha'om V'Notel, anybody that does not need to take tzedakah money and does so anyway in a sly and deceitful way, Eino Meis Achi Tzarech L'Vriyas, he will not die before he does indeed need the tzedakah in the real form. So that's, again, just I wouldn't call it a threat, but I would call it something to be careful about for those aniyim or those non-aniyim that are going around asking for money that don't really need it. For us, though, the question is, how exactly do we know who is, you know, legit and who's not? Exactly what bedika, what type of bedika do we do?
Well,
so,
why
yes.
That if there's no need for a person taking a tzedakah, it's only that the Yisrael only is chal unless if they do it in the way that you're a merame.
One more time, I don't think I understood the question. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm wondering whether or not if there's some sort of answer, let's say if you put this in the, you know, from a kupat tzedakah that
right.
Somebody's doing it from a kupat tzedakah, they're just giving out food, right?
Okay.
And let's say, you know, let's say at a shelter. Somebody who's not necessarily in need can go there and go get a quick meal as well if they
right.
So choose.
Right.
They're
okay.
Not being merame. In doing so, isn't there an issur for doing that as well? I mean, it seems like the specific words
right.
For this issur are tied to umerameha am v'notel.
Right. I think you would say that probably yes, if they're going in, they're not included. Again, it depends what the criteria are for who they're saying should come. If they just say anybody can show up and eat, then maybe it's not a problem. But if it's specifically geared towards those that do not have food of their own or they're homeless or whatever the case is, then certainly somebody else who just walks in and takes the food is absolutely being around the people there and absolutely is wrong.
So people who are making aliyah today who don't necessarily need 1,500 shekel, let's say. This just came up recently because of a cousin of mine that I debated these things back and forth this month.
Okay.
It's a handout that the government technically gives, but it was originally intended to help the people who are making aliyah. You know, who are making aliyah from foreign places that need a little bit of money to be able to get started in the country
uh-huh.
Today. Would you say the people who make aliyah today?
Okay, did anybody else forget this money? Because I actually don't know what you're talking about.
Mishrodek Pitam make a payout as an absorption basket.
Oh, it's part of it. Oh, okay, but that's much more than 1,500 shekel. That could be already up to 6,000 shekel. Okay, so now...
That's a monthly.
Okay, I understand. Now I know what you're talking about. If that's... If I'm assuming...
That's not the back of us.
Right, so my impression is that even if it may have started as the, you know, as a way to help them make it for the first few months, I think today it's given as a standard, and even if that's the point, the government doesn't go asking different people, do you need this money, do you not need this money, do you have enough money to live or not. I think there's absolutely no problem in taking that, as far as I understand. Again, my information is wrong, please let me know at some point, but I don't think that's a problem at all. It's something which, as far as I know, is standard today already.
I don't think it's supposed to be a tzedakah thing, though.
Right, I don't think so either. Maybe
it was instituted
it was.
I think like child allowances and stuff
right.
Like that. It's
right.
Like a tax credit.
You don't
that's
have to
right.
Take it, right? You don't have to go out that from if you don't want to.
Right, yeah, no, you don't. For sure don't have to, but I don't think that it's a problem. I never understood that was what was going on with that. Okay. Right, so that's a question. How would you check today to see whether somebody's legit or not? So let's just first start with an individual. Somebody knocks at your door and you open the door and he says, hi, you know me already, I've been here 5 times this year, I come from, well, I'm not going to say where because you probably know, you'll know who I'm talking about, but you know me already, please give me money, unfortunately I have all these astronomical medical bills, etc. So how do you know that this person is legit? So the first thing to do, of course, is to check his haskama. So just to make sure that he has some sort of haskama or tzedakah from some sort of rav somewhere that says that this person is indeed in need and really can use your tzedakah funds. That's the easiest and simplest way to check to see whether the person really is legit or not. Now, if you start asking me from that point, well, how do you know the haskama is correct? Maybe he forged the haskama. It's apparently not that difficult to forge these haskamas to get a signature, whatever it is. Maybe he twisted the signature about something else and he took it and borrowed it for this. Again, you can ask all sorts of questions here. The chiyuv that we mentioned last time of just ayashel daf nichlam, that just that you can't send them away with nothing. I don't think that you, personally, again, this is my personal opinion, and I'm sure you'll find different opinions about this, but I don't think that you need to have more than just checking the haskama in order to do that. Just to give them a couple shekels, whatever it is, you certainly don't need to go checking and reading every single thing very, very carefully. Again, you might find something along the way that might raise more of a question, but as a basic rule, I think that's the most important thing, just to make sure that the haskamas are in order and that, you know, the Yishurim are there. That would seem to be the appropriate approach. If you're talking about a little bit more money or a gabbai tzedakah that's already giving out serious amounts of funds, then already I would say that there's room to go a little bit farther in that case. And again, this is all my own suggestions here. This is not something that I saw in these farm exactly. This is, again, just a sort of a direction. It makes sense that maybe you'd go a little bit farther. And if you have the opportunity to call one of the references on his sheet there, you call the Rav in Beit Shemesh or in Ashdod or whatever it is, if there's some sort of phone number, if he's easy to reach. Again, if it's not so easy to reach, it's not so simple. But if it's something which is just, at least you could try making a simple phone call and seeing, do they know who the person is? Do they sign the haskama? And assuming that they agree that he's for real, he's yasher, then that would be even better, especially if you're giving him significant amounts of money. Sorry, other question?
I was just going to ask, you're asking whether the haskama is legit, but I'm curious as to what, obviously, the checks the rabbi who gives the haskama does in order to check that their claim is legit.
You're talking about the rabbi that gives the haskama?
Yeah.
Good, okay, that's a good question. Every rav is a little bit different. I don't know what Rav Hadaya does. I do not know what his standards are. Different rabbanim will basically sit down with the ani if they have a few minutes and really interrogate them to just go through. He'll have to explain exactly what it is. He'll have to explain if he's asking for, you know, thousands and thousands of shekel. They're going to want to know, so exactly what is it for? Do you have any other work already? You know, do you have parnasa? Are there other things that you're not telling us? When you do a thorough check, sometimes things come out that wouldn't have come out on the surface. Again, it depends how much time the Rav is willing to put into this to try to make it happen. Some Rabbanim are pretty quick about it and just look for the, you know, just they want to see the bills and you want to interrogate him a little bit just to see if he seems sincere. Other Rabbanim will really sit down and, you know, talk us where you want a detailed report about exactly what's going on. And you'll see with the onion that come around, some of them will actually have a detailed medical bill to show you to say exactly what the problem is. Again, right now we're not going to get into the question at this moment about, well, what happens if the reason why he has all these medical bills is because he did something wrong himself to get himself into the situation. That was a question we mentioned at the end last time, which we'll maybe come back to in a few minutes, which I don't necessarily have a set answer for. But for now, I think that's the beginning of the direction here.
At what point can you say no? So you take a look, and it looks, you're not an expert, it looks sort of okay, a little bit ropey. When do you have the grounds to basically say, I'm not giving you anything?
Okay.
At what point is it appropriate to say, I'm not
happy? Good question. So here's the problem. The problem is, number one, you never know for sure. I don't know exactly what you mean by iffy. Do you mean in terms of his story, in terms of the documents? It's
you
all
don't know. You don't know.
Right.
It's written in Yiddish.
Sometimes you have people who, they're telling you the story, and the story sort of changes as they're telling you the story. And there's some suspicious
things. So anything that seems to be a little bit off, that seems to be, that not that you didn't understand or that it's just, okay, I just have no idea if this is true. And I think that seems a little bit, I guess we'll use the word fishy. Okay, in that case, as we'll see in a minute, there's this tshuva here from Refine Handler is not exactly the same case, but a somewhat similar case, which maybe you can derive from there what he would say in our case. There's room to say that maybe you shouldn't give him. On the other side, though, just be reminded that there is this iser of some sort of lo salmeses levavcha, it's a suffix iser d'oraisa, if he might be legit, as well as this issue of the Rambam, that you're not supposed to send him away empty-handed. So again, if you wanted to have the average approach, the middle approach, you could say, well, okay, I'm not going to give him a significant amount of money, even if I have a fund which, you know, can give out 100,000 shekel a year, whatever it might be. You know, I'm not going to give him a 3,000 shekel not knowing who he is, and when it's 3,000 a little fishy, you can absolutely give him, you know, 20 shekel or 30 shekel. And again, he might not be happy with you, but in terms of your obligation, you absolutely have benyotzi or whatever chiv you might have had with that amount. That would seem to me to be the most sensible approach to sort of balance the two sides to begin with. But again, if you ask me bottom line, do you absolutely have to give him if something sounds a little bit off? The answer is probably not. The answer is probably not. But again, if it's just an issue that you couldn't read the handwriting or that, you know, you just don't know who the rabbi that he's quote that he has here is, that area I'm not sure. That area I would tend to say that, again, you don't have to give him the most, you know, the highest amount, but to give him something, in that case, I would say, again, Lufiani is Dati. Again, others might disagree, but Lufiani is Dati, I would think that you probably should give him at least a little something.
May I disagree with your first
Yes, answer? Yes, you can disagree.
if you have a fund and you think he's not legit, you shouldn't give even 20 shekels, because it's not your money, it's the fund.
Okay,
you're trusted with that money. For people who trusted you to give it to someone who you believed to be true. You might give 20 shekels from your own money, but not from the fund.
Okay, I hear what you're saying. That's a good point. That's a good point. At the same time, you have to know who the people that gave you the money, did they give it to you to decide to just give it to whoever you want, or they gave it, basically, they want to know for sure that their funds are going to absolutely the right people. I assume the answer is the latter.
Well, there's a bigger issue which we're sort of discussing around, which at some point, someone has to say it's not acceptable. There are people basically that are cheating people out of money. And it's a halakhic approach. It's basically give them 2 shekels, give them 5 shekels, give them 10 shekels, don't give them much.
Right.
The industry of cheating will just go on and on and on.
Right.
Until someone says, you know, it's just not acceptable. Unless you produce the following documentation, people just, and it's allowed.
Okay, so I hear you saying, I agree with David's point.
Cheating.
I mean, I would suspect that, you know, their story may not be 100% legitimate, but
well,
I think by people need money.
People that earn their living from doing this.
Oh, absolutely. But I'm sure they don't do well. I assume they don't do well. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay,
so.
I just came back from the UK, and it was actually good. And I thought people handed out in shul, almost everybody who went.
Right.
They didn't hand out money at all.
Mm-hmm.
What they did is they handed out kind of like these little shofarim that belong to the beis yidden. So basically you pay the beis yidden a certain amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
Like I guess a processing fee or something like that gets taken.
Right.
And then the vast majority of the money otherwise, you know, they hand out to the Ani'im basically will collect all these little tablets, and then they'll present that to the beis yidden on the collection side, but only if they're legit on the collection side will they get the money.
Interesting. Very interesting. So I would say that there's room to say that you should make guidelines that you can't get money unless you produce X, Y, and Z documents. If you have the guidelines in place already to begin with, I think that's absolutely legit, and that's what a lot of people will do. The problem is in Eretz Yisrael, there's just so many Aminim here and so many places that people can go. It's already much harder to invoke certain standards across the board that everybody's following in every single place. It makes things much more difficult. In America also, there's some places, they don't do it exactly that way. It's not quite as organized in the same way, but places that you can't go to every single house and demand money unless, two options, either you have to go to the shul, to the rav, or whoever the guy stuff is, and they will give you money that people in the community have donated for tzedakah, but, you know, to do that, you have to show up, you have to talk to them, they might ask you a question or two, and if they, you know, go to people's houses and say, I'm sorry, it was too hard, then the people won't listen to them. The other option that they have, I know they do this in Teaneck in New Jersey, is they have to have they let people go around to different houses, and there are a lot of people that do this, but they have to go to one of the rabbanim first and get what they call a Teaneck Te'udah. What does that mean? It means they spoke to the rav for a couple minutes. The rav doesn't ask them too many questions. They're pretty lenient about who they accept. But the point is, you took the time to do that, and you'd be surprised, I guess you wouldn't be surprised, how many people, you know, don't do that. They say, oh, I'm sorry, I couldn't reach the rav, this, that, you know. There's at least 5 different rabbanim that work on this, and they say it's not that hard to get a Te'udah, but you have to put in a couple minutes and call the person and do it. So if the rules are already in place, then absolutely there's no reason to say that you should give them otherwise. If there are no specific rules in place, then I guess then we go back to David's point, and I guess what you're saying is an excellent point. I was saying that maybe it's nice to give them a couple shekels just because otherwise you avoid the suffix issue of Raisa. But at the same time, you're probably right, that if everybody gets money, then people that are doing this are going to continue to try to deceive you and to cheat and get money when really they shouldn't be. And if that's the case, then in Echnami, there's room to say that you shouldn't give anything unless you are absolutely satisfied. What I would say though is that if you need help trying to check the references, then it might be worthwhile to try to do that, to get help. Meaning it shouldn't just be, well, okay, I don't know what to make of this, I'll give up, no, I'm not giving you any money. You understand what I'm saying? That's, again, that's an approach which, again, is not an absolute halachic approach. It's an approach which I think is followed in many places, but again, it's not no absolute ground rules here. It would be nice if in our community we were able to get this off the ground, which I think has already been discussed, but nothing has come of it yet. Hopefully sometime soon we can get this moving, that there is some sort of Vad or Gabai, a bunch of Gabayim or Rabbanim that are in charge, that when people come walking around the street, they have some sort of, either the money goes to the Vad, then the Vad gives out the money, or they have some sort of, they went to the Vad spoke to them for a little bit, and they are, you know, convinced sufficiently that they're allowed to walk around and ask money from you. But it takes time, and okay, we'll have to see where that ends up. Just a couple other points about this, which are very important. So this Shuva here in the Avni Ashba is very interesting. So he has a case here that he wanted to know about the following case. He says that there was a case, this is on the source sheet, which number is this? This is number 23. Nish'al b'keta gidan gadam asher nigash above ploni v'tachanat ha'otobusim v'akesh menu aseis lo kesef v'nesiyah ki nevel lo kaspo. Okay, you got the question here? Basically, this, you may have seen this before. You're standing at the bus at the Tachanah Merkazit somewhere, waiting for a bus, and somebody walks up to you and says, I'm really sorry, I don't have any money, I need a bus to get back home to Tel Aviv. Can you please lend me whatever it is, 20 shekel, 23 shekel? So do you have to
give
it to them?
Give.
Say again?
Lend or give?
Give. They don't expect, they're not saying they're going to send you back the money in the mail or anything. So no, so he says here, in this case also, the case was that it was for giving. That's usually how it works. So I'll just read the continuation of the tshuva in Sai, which didn't get on the source sheet. He says, in Medzubar, the case is Shenira mitocha ha'inyanim she'enu medaber emes. It seems to be that something is a little wrong. Okay, he's not telling the truth. Again, do you know for sure? No, you don't know for sure. But you get the impression from just looking at him, something about it that seems to be that he's trying to get money. But he's not actually, he doesn't really need the money for the bus. The same thing would be true, of course, if the 2 days later when you go back to the same bus station, you see the same guy again saying he's missing money for his bus. You already know that something is wrong. So he says, could be the person really does need tzedakah, and the reason he's asking this way is because he's embarrassed to ask for tzedakah. It's also possible that he is trying to cheat you. How should you go about responding to this query for money? So he says, second?
Buy him a ticket.
good suggestion. If he lets you buy him a ticket, then that might be a good suggestion. I tried that once for somebody that asked me for money. I think they didn't want to let me. I think, again, I could be, I'm not remembering correctly. But anyway, so he quotes, or finally, I quote the Gemara we saw before. For you doing different how Gemara ksuva stuff, samaches amad aleph, bo v'nachazik tova l'ramayim shel molehen, hayin chotim b'chol yom. That's the Gemara we spoke about before. Upei Rusho, he says, what does that mean? Shekeo sheyesh harbei ramayim, since there are many people that are cheaters, ein chayavim aseis b'chol echad, you're not obligated to give every single one. It could be that he is a Ramai, since we don't know who he is. So Pineliner is even going a step farther than we mentioned before. He's saying if there's any chance that maybe he's a Ramai, that already obviates you from the chiyuv to give him. You don't have to give him. If you have any question at all, that maybe he's not telling the truth. If that's the case, again, understand what he's doing with this Gemara here. If that's the case, even when there's nothing to lead you to believe that, meaning just because you just don't know who he is, you have no way of knowing whether he's for real or not. If in that case we're saying, the way he's written the Gemara, that gives us an opportunity to say, okay, you don't have to give him at all. Certainly in a case where you have a real chashash because something tangible happened that you can see that maybe he's cheating. We don't have an obligation to give him anything at all. That's what he paskins here in the case of the bus ticket. And again, you see from his shua, from the five lines here, you see an approach which even goes far beyond this case, which seems to be that the case that we spoke about, if you have a question, you don't really know whether he's telling the truth and either his documents seem a little bit off, a little fishy, or he doesn't have any documents for sure. In that case, he's basically giving you a blanket of answer that you can say, I'm sorry, I can't give you anything. Not what I said to give, a few shekel, but not to give anything. And that would definitely seem to fit with the approach that you mentioned before, in terms of certainly for a tzedakah fund. That if there's any question at all, that you would say that you don't have to give him. Okay. Any other questions on this point? Yeah.
I was just going to ask. You're saying you don't have an obligation. Your starting point was that because there are a lot of cheaters, it means that you have an opportunity not to have to give to everybody.
That's how we put it.
But I'm wondering. There's no problem if you gave to everybody.
Second.
Even if there are cheats,
right?
There's no problem giving to a
cheat. Yeah, there's no problem. Well, I shouldn't say that. The question is, what do you mean by a problem? Have you violated any issur?
Yeah.
Have you done anything wrong?
Yeah.
Not necessarily. Again,
did you do a mitzvah tzedakah?
That's the question. So did your money actually go for tzedakah or not? So it could be that you did a nice mitzvah chesed. Every time you give somebody money, they always thank you for it. They're always appreciative. So even if you did nothing else, you definitely did some sort of act of chesed. You made them feel better. Okay, that's, I think that is clear, that you've done something good. Have you put the mitzvah tzedakah? Not necessarily. If the money doesn't go to the things that it's supposed to go for,
because
you have
one way of solving this, as you said, is the loophole. There are cheats that you don't have to give to everyone.
Right.
Another way of solving it is give to everyone.
Right.
Because it,
right.
I mean, you'll have to give less to everyone.
Right. Right.
You have to give less to everyone.
Right. Right. So then, right. So then the problem is a lot of your money ends up not going to the right places.
People will actually go and get a job.
Right.
So you think you
okay? So that will get to That's the next question. Okay, that's the next question. Then. So give me a few more minutes.
What? You give me money?
Sure.
How much you want?
I was in a situation with a phone. The person was Annie because she walks around asking for money. She was basically short of money to buy medication.
Right.
And she asked me directly.
Right.
Because she's short, she can't afford money. She was like 100 shekels short.
Right.
And she said, do I have 100 shekels on me?
What is it for?
She asked people around her.
She asked everybody or she just asked you?
She asked people around. She went to this one. In the form of
right, I understand.
So obviously the money, you have to give her to that person? Because I know she's an Annie, she walks around to ask for money all the time.
Right.
Well, I don't know, there's no exactly she's Annie, but she's a beggar.
Right.
For this way. I think she's an Annie, she's a beggar.
Right.
But at that point, I knew she was going to give the money directly to the pharmacy because she
So in that case, it definitely stands to reason that if it's definitely going for the right purposes, then, again, you don't have to give her 100 shekel if she's approaching everybody in the store, but to give her a couple shekel, that probably is included in the Rambam's case of Ayashov Daf Nichlam, that you shouldn't give her nothing. Again, this is assuming that you know already, that you're familiar with her, you've seen her before, you know that she obviously does not have that much money, and you know that the money is going directly to the place that it's supposed to be going.
Yeah.
So according to what we said last time, that Rambam for sure would seem to be that you should give her a little something.
Are you the only one in the
Say again?
He's not asking anybody else.
That's a good question. So that would probably go back to the question that we had last week, which basically said it was Machlokes HaPoskim, whether if they approach you specifically, if you can afford it, and there's nobody else around, then according to some Poskim, you may indeed have an obligation to give her the whole amount of money. According to others, we said, well, no, because there are other people even if it's not in the story now, there are other ways that other people in the area, you would not necessarily have an obligation to give her everything. So in that case, again, I wouldn't tell you, unless you want to be generous, I don't think there are enough Poskim that say that you don't have to give her the whole thing, that you can get by with giving her a little bit less, unless you want to be especially generous. Meaning that already can go either direction.
Mm-hmm.
But if you wanted to, if you're looking to not have to tear the whole thing, that's what it seems to be. Again, every situation is a little bit different, but based on the way you're describing it, it would seem to be that you probably should give her something. That's what it seems to be, at least to me. Another interesting story that happened to me, again, one of these crazy stories, but it's the same kind of thing. Basically, one time I was at the Kozel, and this guy comes up to me, asks for money. Okay, usually, okay, give him a little something. I want to give him a little something. Chassan's Kala. Okay, who's the Chassan, or who's the Kala? He says, I'm the Chassan. Oh, really? You're the Chassan? Now that's a different story. So I started talking to him. I actually spoke to him for at least 5 to 10 minutes. I said, what's going on? He doesn't have enough money, so even for some of the regular wedding needs. And he's getting married next week. Oh, where are you getting married? Somewhere, this hall in Yerushalayim. I think he told me the name of the hall. He didn't tell me the name of the hall. He said somewhere in Yerushalayim. And he really didn't have enough money, and I asked him what the money was going to go for. I spoke to him for a while. I said, can I come to the wedding if I give you some money? He said, yes, of course. I would be thrilled if you came. So I gave him a lot more than I should have. I gave him at least 50 shekel. Maybe I gave him 100 shekel. I don't remember exactly. I thought I was, I spoke to him for quite a while. It seemed like he was telling the truth. He looked very sincere. Young guy, whatever it was, I felt bad for him. So about a month later, I'm at the Kotel again, and guess who I see this time asking for money again for Hachmasas Kala for a wedding. I just looked at him with this sad look in my eyes, and I walked away. I couldn't handle it. It was too much for me. After that, I lost all my faith, unfortunately, in some of the tzedakah people, which again I had until that point. Say again? Yeah, I know. Obviously, I was stupid, okay? Obviously, I was stupid. I shouldn't have given him 50, 100 check or whatever it was. But then that's a classic case of, unfortunately, the way that it is, that I wanted to believe him. I spoke to him for a while. I really wanted to believe that he was telling the truth. But you can't. You can't necessarily... he had no huskums. He had no documents. He had no nothing. I asked him about it. I asked him, he said he had this person there. You give him the whole story. I bought the story.
But he didn't use it for food or...
What did you say? I don't know what he used it for. I hope he'd use it for something good. And I would vocal about it. You know, I would vocal about it. Hopefully he used it for something good, even if it was not for the purpose that he told me he was using it for, which is not necessarily the worst thing in the world. What'd you say? Right. It could be. Or he had a good smoke. Or he had a good smoke.
Do you have obligation to sit on
it? Say again?
Do you have obligation to...
Who are you going
to
talk?
The other people.
The other I at the hotel?
No, the other people. You see somebody telling the story, you can say, this guy is a liar.
If I see him going to somebody else, yeah, that's not a bad idea. Not a bad idea. If I had, you know, 3 hours to wait around there, I would say, absolutely.
I would say, get me my money back, or I'm going to stay here all day.
Second?
I say, get me my money back, or I'm staying here all day.
I didn't want to fight.
The same organization in London that posts these acceptance slips, posts lists and descriptions of people that go collecting.
That's
and what they collect for.
They are good. They are good. That's the way that it should be. And again, unfortunately, Eretz Yisrael, there's too many Aniyim around. It's impossible to do anything like that. Okay, let me give you a couple more cases. I'm afraid we're not going to get to the second source sheet today, which I guess is fine. We'll have to discuss what to do afterwards. A couple other points on this issue. So let's take the following case. Okay, let's say that you know that really he does need money. Okay, you like, look at his documents and you think that he really is probably legit, and he probably does need the money. Let's say organizations or other aniyim that are, you know, clear, they have haskamas, but again, you feel that something is wrong and you don't know what. So nothing is wrong with the haskamas, but let's say the suspicion is as follows. The suspicion is that a lot of these people, you know, you give them 50 shekels, 100 shekels, it's supposed to go towards their medical bills. Where is the money going? What do you think is happening to that money? Let's say let's say in chutzlar, specifically, people come around in, you know, in these fancy cars. They come out and they ask for money. Where do you think your money is going?
To the chauffeur.
To the driver.
Okay, maybe.
In London, who gives a lot of, he collects and gives, he says very clearly, for every £18 that you give, 5 goes to the charity. And 5 is what counts as your master.
Right.
Blown £13 of master.
Does he say that you should
give. Firstly, you shouldn't give that much. You should give those to the You have to know from a master staffing perspective, only £5 counts.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Where does that money go?
Unfortunately.
Out of the 18, about 4 or so goes to the driver, who's schlepping them around, takes a commission. Travel expenses, the personal salary of the person who's collecting, administration, £5 hits the Israeli charity at the end.
Isn't it better just to donate over the internet?
Absolutely.
Good. So basically, again, from these cases, that's why the recommendation is, and we'll talk about this more in terms of the Master Kesavim perspective.
We mentioned
next week.
Last time.
Yeah.
The money which is used for the journey, for instance, for coming to collect.
Right.
It's part of running the charity. Why do I come that account?
No.
Because the question is, how much, well, what counts as tzedakah? You're giving tzedakah, but your tzedakah money is supposed to be going to...
Speaking of a
yeshiva, for instance. Oh, so yeshiva is a different story. A yeshiva we're not going to talk about tonight. That's,
Dr. Rabbi is going to pay salaries to teachers who aren't all aniyim.
Is anything you raise for the yeshiva?
Right, good. So that's yeshiva is probably a different story. Again, we don't have time to get into it tonight, but generally speaking, the post gemara a lot more mekel on what is included in either tzedakah or master stuff. And when given to a yeshiva, anything which strengthens or helps your tzedakah ha-torah is usually assumed to be included. And you caveat before, which may not necessarily be the same thing when you're talking about actual tzedakah for actual aniyim. So, just back to some of these cases, again, so you have to be careful that, you know, it's better to give to organizations that you know do not have large overhang. Our general practice, my personal family practice, we try to give to organizations such as Yad Eliezer and some of the other ones that are very, very well known for having extremely low overhang. Because we know that most of our, all of our tzedakah money is going for the right purposes. And again, on the street, you want to give a little bit based on what we said last time, but to give large sums of money to people that are coming around, again, it may not be the best idea because you don't really know exactly what they're going to do with the money. In terms of your obligation to give them, so it's the same story as before. If you suspect for some real reason that they are actually, they're misusing the money, there's absolutely reason to say that maybe you shouldn't give them. If there's no reason to suspect that, you don't know what they're doing, then already one could say, like the Rambam we said last time, that maybe the Rambam would say you have to give them something. You don't have to give them a lot, but to not send them away empty-handed, Again, that would, you know, perhaps might be one side. Rav Feinheimer, on the other hand, says the other side. He says, he wants to know, are you chayav to give every single ani that asks for money? So he says that even though the Shulchan Aruch has, the Ramak quotes the halakha we mentioned before of Ayashov Dach Nechlam, that you shouldn't send away empty-handed. He says, at nistaver shedivrei harama airi, the makom shemakir mes ha'ani, he thinks that this Ramah is referring to places where you know who the aniim are. The yodim ki uvadai ani, and you know that he's definitely an ani, v'lachen yeshchiyu laseis lo'ak l'panem ma'ashu, and therefore you have a chiyuv to give him something. Avalin eno makiru, but if you don't have a clue who he is, mistar she'en v'zeshum iser, shari tachin she'eno ani. Then he thinks logically that there's not really an iser in not giving him money, because yitachin, it could be that he's not really an ani. So he's being, Feinlander is being very makil here, for reasons that we understand, that the whole chiyuv does not necessarily apply if you're not sure that this person is really an ani to begin with, or in our case, maybe he's an ani, but he's not necessarily going to be using the funds for the purpose that they're supposed to be used for. So again, there's room to say that you don't have to give every single person that knocks at your door. At the same time, again, that's not the only way to read that Ramah, and there's definitely room to say on the other side that at least to give him a small amount of money, a little something, is not a bad idea either.
What do you mean by you misusing of the funds?
Again, let's say the people on the street, you go and you walk through Yerushalayim, and people are, you know, sticking out their hand, you give me money, in Hebrew, where they don't say anything, right? So you give them money, okay, thank you very much, you gave them money. Where is that money going to? 3 hours later, they gone into the store, and they went to go buy a cigarette to smoke, you know, or they went to go buy, you know, some ice cream or something. I don't know what they bought, but it's not, clearly not going for...
They bought a lottery ticket.
Second?
They bought a lottery ticket.
A lottery ticket, exactly. So that's another child, is it mutter to buy lottery tickets?
But that's what they did.
Good. Right. So the point is, you have no idea what they're doing.
If this person is someone who, halachically speaking, should receive tzedakah.
Good.
And he spends it on a cigarette.
Right.
Does that impact in any way your having given?
Good. So that's
wrong with the cigarette?
Yeah. Sorry.
Buying a cigarette.
Thinking of is day maksoho. Anything which is something which he would to have is theoretically included in that tzedakah.
Kay.
Once he reaches that stage where you have to give him.
Okay. Question is then, when the people are asking for tzedakah, what are they asking for? If you ask them, what are you going to use this tzedakah for? What are they going to tell you?
Food.
Right. They're probably going to tell you something which may not necessarily be the case. And once that's true, then already they're clearly in the category of a Ramai if you think that they might be going and doing something else with it, even if they're really necessary, even if it's true that they will, that is what they need, and they need a cigarette because otherwise they can't live, they need the drugs. Right? He's taking drugs because he can't go through life otherwise. Are you going to give him money so he can go get drugs so that he won't, you know, that his head will be, he'll be happy?
This guy would rather have his dose of drugs than his food. He'd
probably absolutely, 100%. So,
but he's in a... is that a heter to not give him?
Right. So personally, if you ask me, I would think the answer is yes. But again, I'm willing to hear the other side.
Yeah, the tzedakah from the Ranana, Shiftei Yitzhak, has an absolute exclusion. Anyone who smokes cannot get tzedakah from
the Good. So we'll come back to that in just a second. Very good. We'll come back to that in just a minute, and then we'll have to wrap up for tonight. The question is a good question, a general question of whether you have an obligation to give somebody tzedakah when they're...
cigarettes.
If they need the money, but you're not sure whether they're using it properly... So again, I didn't find the question directly addressed anywhere, unfortunately. Again, I'll have to look a little more. Maybe there are other places that they discussed. From a fine handler, it seems pretty clear that he probably would say that you do not have to give to them, though he doesn't spell it out. The other questions that I did see discussed, which are a little bit different, one case that Rav Moshe discusses is a case of giving to a organization which does not necessarily give money to places that follow the proper rules of the Torah. Now, that's a little more of a question, and again, that's not exactly our case now, and that by itself is an interesting discussion, which we're not going to have now. That's one case which is a little bit different, and presumably you would say the same thing is true about organizations which do not use the money for the things that they're supposed to. Another case that I found here in Rabbi Taub Sefer is a case of somebody who has character flaws. He has midos flaws and other character flaws. You have to give him tzedakah. So in this case, he quotes the shalah here that says that maybe in that case, even though obviously something is wrong with the person, you still do have an obligation to give him tzedakah. I don't think that's exactly the same case as we have here. And there's definitely room to say that in this case you should not necessarily give him money if the money is not going to be going for the proper usage. But again, at the same time, there's what to say on the other side. I'm not going to give you a definite answer on this one.
Can we say Anshei Ircha Kodmin? Right?
All right, so that we were supposed to get to tonight, but we didn't get there yet. We'll have to push that off.
Isn't there a moment somewhere where he doesn't want to give tzedakah to the people who are not Talmidei Chachamim?
Offhand, I don't remember.
Like Bob had forgotten which jobs they just want to get the doctor because he was a very program, so he gets this guy, so he says, I didn't learn, I didn't do Mishnah, I didn't do anything. And then he says, Pablo Sadik or Rev.
Right,
and
okay.
Rebbe gives him. So from there you see that Rebbe, the Chasvila didn't want to give to someone who's not a Tamid Chochem.
Okay, so the question is how do you understand, right? Okay, good. That's the question, how you understand that Gemara. We're not going to have time to get into it now, and offhand I don't remember the Gemara well enough to be able to discuss it in an analytical fashion, so we'll have to hold off on that for now. I just want to make one or two other points before we stop for tonight. One other question, which again, we don't have time to really discuss, and this also is not so clear. Well, let's say, this goes back to Ben's point, this happens here. Phil mentioned this case last week. What happens when the person comes to you, he needs to talk about his medical bills are all legitimate, but the reason why he needs to have, surgery for this thing and surgery for that thing is because he's been smoking for the last 30 years. Does he get tzedakah? So what would you say, based on the fund that you were discussing before, what would have been their rule?
The fund would say, no, I'm not saying that's right.
Right.
The fund would say no.
Understood. So again, a fund has to be careful because a fund is, as you mentioned, David, is community
fund. The
fund
has to be then determining that the cause of their medical bill is that.
Right. No, in this case, it actually said on the thing itself, the doctor diagnosis said that you need surgery because you've been smoking. It was pretty clear.
A recovering alcoholic who needs
right.
Good. He's a recovering alcoholic.
Good. So in those kinds of situations, it's hard to know exactly what you're dealing with. If you knew for sure that the person was what we'll call chozer b'tshuva, that he did smoke, but he wants to change. Let's say maybe he can't change. It's too hard to change, which is also a question, but he wants to change. The machshava is there. I think there's room to say that you should give him something. It doesn't mean you should give him 100,000 shekel, but it means that you probably should give him a little something. If the fact that he's smoking and he's still smoking, he doesn't care to change, he knows that he needs surgery, but he's not about to change, he doesn't regret anything. I don't know. I guess how can somebody not regret that? But I don't know. In that case, I would say maybe it's not so clear. I'm not sure. I could hear both sides on that question. I don't know. One other point, and then we'll have to stop. And then we'll take any other questions that are left. What is the story for somebody that you don't know whether they really deserve to get stuck? What does that mean? It means that, yes, right now they are poor, but there might be other options for them to do in order to get through life without stuck.
Yeah.
This is good. So I'm going to take a more general example. If you look at section 7 here on the source sheet from last time. So this is a case of like this. Okay, you have these people in Yerushalayim. That basically say that they want tzedakah, and when I was in yeshiva, 15 years, 12 years ago, whatever it was, I could point out to you which aniyim in Yerushalayim sat on this corner or sat on that corner and asked for tzedakah, or in the old city. I come back and make aliyah 2 years ago, which is about 10 years later, the exact same people. There are a lot more of them now, but some of the exact same people are on the exact same places that they were 10 years ago. Now again, you never know what the situation is, but suffice it to say, it's probably reasonable to say that at least some of those people, if they really wanted to, they probably could have found some way of supporting themselves. But because they're used to asking for money, that has become their pranasa to ask for tzedakah. Do you have an obligation to give such a person tzedakah? Okay. So again, we don't have time to really get into this now, but very quickly, I'll just tell you the sources that I've seen, what they do with this question. Source number 27, this is a tour, which is partially based on Mishnayos, and this is also quoted in the Shulchan Aruch. Yesh bo masayim zuz. Okay. Somebody who has 200 zuz, afilu eino nosev enosein bahen, even if you don't do anything with that money, it's considered to be money that goes for food, it's not money that you're going to use as capital to try to work out a business and get more money. O sheish lo chamishim, or he has 50 zuz, shenosev enosein bahen, that you can do business with. So the halakha in that case is lo yitol me'at tzedakah, you cannot take from the tzedakah fund in that case, but everything follows the time and place. What's going on here? So basically, Chazal understood that who is somebody that deserves to get tzedakah, that qualifies as an ani? The answer generally is, again, there's a lot of discussion about this, but the bottom line is that Chazal seems to have determined, this is based on Mishnayos and Peah, that a person who can have who has less than 200 zuz for the year is considered to be a small enough amount that he cannot support himself for the entire year. And in that situation, he would be allowed to take from the tzedakah fund. Again, that's different, obviously, in terms of the amount of money that we would have today, but the point is that, generally speaking, somebody that does not have enough money to support himself in an average way for an entire year, he would be able to get tzedakah. So the question is,
money,
for the second case.
Say again? You think he has to have money on hand to support himself to live on for a whole
Or he
year?
Makes enough money from his business or his work, whatever he's doing. It wouldn't necessarily make a difference. The question is, what then is the Shulchan Aruch doing in the Tur and the Mishnah going and talking about the case of the 50 zuz? So the 50 zuz, again, as you see here, the 50 zuz is the amount of money if somebody is able to do business or take the money and try to invest it or do something else with the money. That 50 zuz apparently at that time was considered to be sufficient amount that you can go and make enough of a profit to be able to support yourself for the year. So in both of those cases, the halacha is that you do not have to take from the tzedakah fund. The question is, well, why are these two cases mentioned? Well, if you're able to make enough money with 50 zuz, then why do we have a standard of 200 zuz? So, again, I didn't have a chance to look so much. It seems to me that a lot of the earlier sources don't really address that question directly. In the Achronim, and Rabbi Tablin to this point, I heard this from a number of other sources as well, that what the answer they want to say is that it depends on who the person is. And this is a very, very, very logical answer and very practical as well. Somebody who is not able to work because he's too old or because he has a handicap or for some other reason, so he is allowed to follow the standard of 200 zuz. And if he does not have enough money to make it in what he has right now, topless for the year, then he would be allowed to take tzedakah for the year. However, somebody who has the ability to work and can get a job, it doesn't have to be a high-paying job, but some sort of job that he can make enough money to last him through the year, then the only amount that you are obligated to give him in terms of tzedakah or that the community is obligated to give him would be 50 zuz. That is meant that he needs, in order to get himself off the ground, to start his business or to start whatever he needs to do or to invest. Again, obviously every case is different. That's why you need to investigate every case individually to see what the person is capable of, what he can do, etc., etc. But that seems to be the point. The upshot of this explanation would be the following, very, very clear, that if the person is somebody that could work, then you do not have an obligation to give him tzedakah for more than the amount that he needs to get himself off the ground. If it's somebody that cannot work, that has a handicap, or it's a widow, God forbid, that has 10 kids at home, she has enough trouble taking care of her kids, she needs the full-time money. In that case, clearly we would say that you give her the full amount for the year, you give her what we would say is the 200 zuz, in the language of the Chazal. So halachos, again, so you have to know from this case, all the people that are asking for money, if some of them are the same people over and over and over again, if you think that maybe they could work, then maybe you don't have to give them tzedakah. The problem is, as Rabbi Tal points out, you don't always know. Meaning, if you don't always know, maybe there are other factors that you don't realize. You don't exactly know everything that's going on in their lives. They may look like they're healthy, they may look like they could really get a job, and yet there may be other factors that you're not aware of, and that makes figuring out this obligation a lot more difficult. Therefore, Rabbi Tal, at least, again, I can hear a second side, Rabbi Tal seems to suggest that because it's not clear exactly who's in this category, that the Chachili should try to give them at least something. Again, you don't have to give them a lot, but at least you should give them something. But that, again, is referring to somebody that actually comes knocking or comes asking you for money. If you're talking about things that you heard about over the radio or other cases that you know or that he's standing across the street over there, then that wouldn't necessarily apply and you wouldn't necessarily have to give them money. But somebody that asks you, so again, it's, you know, there's a suffix here that it could be that maybe you should give them a little something, maybe. Again, that's not necessarily true for a tzedakah fund. For a fund, I think that a lot of the funds try to be careful to give only the amount of money that's needed in order to get them off the ground or for the expenses or to help them start a business. They don't necessarily give them money for the entire year unless they really feel that the family needs it. Yeah?
Someone who comes, who's able to work, who gives him 50 zuz. Get him started.
Okay.
He spent it on food. He comes back
good.
3 months later.
Okay.
He's in a situation where there's nothing. You think that you don't have to give him?
So again, it depends on the exact situation. If, let's say he had used the money for business or for the reasons to get him off the ground, had he used the money for that purpose, then would he still need money now? If the answer is yes, then...
No, but he didn't.
Right. So then, I guess every case is different. It depends
on... The question is, what's the responsibility?
I understand.
He's not a rabbi.
Right.
He's in a situation where he's allowed to ask for the tzedakah. You have to give him up to 50 zuz.
Right.
Why do you...
So it depends. It's hard to know, because in that case, it could be that for that beginning start, he needs to have food on the table before he can get started with his business. You have to know every case is a little bit different.
Okay, no, but he took the wrong decision last week. Is that a reason not to give him money now? He is... By all objective criteria, now.
According to what we're saying, which I think is the approach of many poskim, if the case is really, and again, every case is different, you have to know exactly what you're dealing with, but if the case is really that he took the money and used it for something that is not what he was supposed to be using it for, I don't know about giving him a knas, but you're not obligated. You don't have a chiyuv to give him more money than you would have had to continue getting him off the ground. If the food needs to get is necessary to get them off the ground, then absolutely that's important. Even if
you
want to start, you want to start doing this.
No,
he
didn't. But he didn't think of it when you came.
Right.
When you were here 10 years ago, they didn't. He didn't think of using their money.
So usually, I understand. Usually, what the tzedakah organizations do, the ones that work this way, usually what they try to do is work with them to try to find out how much money do they need for food, how much money do they need for electricity bills, how much money do they need to start, let's say.